all four immunizations.
Thank you, sir. Hi, welcome.
Thank you. My name's Heidi Jo Grubbs, and I am here today as a Portland resident, a proud parent, a dental hygienist, and member and immediate past president of the Oregon Dental Hygienist Association. I speak in favor of community water fluoridation. As a dental hygienist, I've worked in many areas around the Portland area, and I've seen the difference that community water fluoridation can make. When I work in Salem, which does have the fluoridated water, I'm always surprised at how few cavities and fillings I see. 20-year-olds without one filling or a need for it because they grew up and live in a city with water fluoridation. Then there is the extreme contrast of working in the other areas nearby without community water fluoridation. When I worked in Sandy with WIC patients, there would be entire families coming in with multiple and frequently severe dental needs, the kind in which severely affected their overall health and quality of life. Many of these families had no idea that they did not have the preventative measure of fluoride in their water. These families were trying to do the right thing and bringing their children to have their teeth cleaned, sealants placed, and topical fluoride treatments. It was often too late to call it prevention. It is my opinion that you not only have the right to implement community water fluoridation, but you also have a duty to your citizens. The Portland Water Bureau's vision statement even addresses the notion that they are to enhance the public health of the region. Merriam-Webster Dictionary defines public health as the art and science dealing with the protection and improvement of community health by organized community effort and including preventive medicine and sanitary and social science. Thank you for all of your time and hard work to research the science of this subject. I ask for you to do what is best for the majority of your community. It will be greatly appreciated by those of us who see the overwhelming benefits on a routine basis. Thank you.
And who's the picture on your lapel?
That is my son. He is wasn't able to be here today since he's in seventh grade now. So, yes, and I must say I am very proud of him. And when I lived in Silverton, I was really happy that we had fluoridated water. That was after I graduated from dental hygiene school. Before then, I lived here in the city region, and we did not have fluoride. And I was not educated enough to know that he needed that, that prescriptive medication. And so when we lived there, I was really thrilled. And it was one of those things that moving back to Portland was a difficult decision, and that was part of the reason why. So.
Well, congratulations, Mom.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much. Appreciate it.
I wanted to respond to the question about the implementation date.
Okay. You're welcome to find more comfortable chairs.
I didn't, but the Water Bureau said publicly before I even got an explanation that it would take them 5 years to implement a fluoridation system. I didn't ask them about that. Later, I heard them publicly say it would take 3 years. Then I did ask to meet with them. I asked for the explanation as to why it would take that long. The explanation I was given that I will relay to each of you, including those listening, is they said that most of the process would include permitting, that the actual construction is a pretty standard process. It's a 1,200 square foot addition to property we already own, to a building we already own, to an injection system that already exists, that the construction time itself would take no more than a year, but they built in time for the permitting process with Multnomah County. I looked at that data and looked at other cities who had done similar kind of work. So San Antonio, for an example, voters on November 7th, 2000, approved a fluoridation system. They began fluoridating their system in August 2002, 1 year and 9 months. Las Vegas, the 1999 legislature in May of 1999 passed Assembly Bill 284 requiring the Southern Nevada Water Authority to fluoridate their system. They began fluoridating on March 1st, 2000. That took 10 months. I looked at the Water Bureau's construction data. I certainly wouldn't, am not going to quarrel with their engineers in terms of the construction timeline of 12 months. I do have some expertise. They don't, that is, in the permitting system, having overseen the Bureau of Development Services for 18 months. I've managed many processes like this, including the current construction of the brand new fire station on the east side of the Hawthorne Bridge, which, for an example, I was originally told couldn't begin construction until 2014, and in fact, at the end of next month, we'll start driving pilings for that station because some of these processes that the Water Bureau was assuming would take longer than what I know don't can happen simultaneously. And so if this passes the day after it passes, it is my intention to begin the permitting process immediately and have, and 18 months is more than adequate to construct the facility. In fact, I expect it to be online by January 1st, 2014.
Since you're responding,
thank you. No. This is a council hearing. It is not a free-for-all. So, Mark, that means no. We have folks here that waited their turns. You got your turn. I'm not going to allow this. This isn't a circus. It's a council chamber. Hi. Thanks for waiting. Appreciate it. Would you like to begin?
Hi. I'm Dr. Ginny Feldman, a pediatrician who worked in Portland with mostly poor families for three decades. I saw the toddlers with all the dental issues that you saw and heard about. Preventable if we actually followed through on a Portland vote that did vote for fluoridation of water. So, since we don't have it, I always prescribe fluoride tablets for my kids. But studies of compliance show that at best, patient takes pills or follows any of our medical or dental advice less than 60% of the time. Effective public health interventions require no patient work. Teaching parents to lock up aspirin didn't do anything for aspirin poisoning. Only requiring safety caps universally did that. Those preventive dental practices people have urged you to spend more money on, they happen even less frequently in our poor families. They're working two jobs, they get changing or no health insurance. My poor kids I worked with are already disadvantaged. It's not fair to make them even more disadvantaged with their dental problems. My dental history shows classical fluoride versus no fluoride. I was raised in a ghetto in Chicago, which was fluoridated in the 50s. I have two small pit fillings in my teeth. My husband raised in a non-fluoridated area, 20 cavities, three crowns, two implants, and spends at least three sessions a month with his dentist. Now, rarely in medicine can I assure patients of the high risk, the high benefit to risk ratio that fluoridation has. I've personally read and summarized here, which I've left with the council, 252 articles and six meta-analyses of fluoride, which I left with you. Unlike Dr. Wu, who says we don't have time for this, I am a physician who says I must take time to look at the articles myself. I would challenge many of the anti-fluoridation folks here who have they actually read the articles. So I can say with confidence to my parents that community water fluoridation does not cause cancer. Subsequent studies that were not mentioned by Dr. Douglas have shown that the initial study by Bisson was not accurate and properly controlled for. The NRC report shows that there was not any influence on thyroid. And in terms of the IQ studies, I'd like to go over those a little bit at length here. The study that they quoted by Troy was actually not a study. It was a review of a review which claimed to be new. All of that stuff has been known. Brazen published a review, a meta-analysis of this very study, came to the exact opposite conclusion from the same reports. NRC had 260-plus articles. When you look at 27 or 28 articles, not very impressive. And you can't add bad articles together and get a trend. I think that's the most common mistake that was made here. Studies that show or purport to show fluoride affects IQ, affects IQ by fluoride are inaccurate because, number one, most of them were done on rats, not humans. The differences in IQs were within the test variation. Even if you have 7 points, if your variation in the test is 7 points, that means nothing. So the argument is that half a point or is it 7 points? The people who created the test say that 7 points is within normal variation. Fluoride levels were 4 to 10 times higher than the one part per million we're talking about.
And your time is up, too. You look exactly like what someone would want in a doctor, and you sound like
female.
That, too.
Who's a female?
Who's a female? How do we not know that you filtered your studies? You know, how do we not know that? How are you just a well-intentioned but sort of captured by the big sort of pharmaceutical big fluoride industry?
Very good question, Jasmine. What I do when I look at studies, I read the methods first. And if I don't groan because the methods are so bad, then I say this study is kind of interesting. There is actually one study by Dr. Rocha who did actually control for many of the things that you've heard about have to be controlled for. Parent IQ, parent income, not controlled in any of the studies that they were mentioned by Dr. Choi. They didn't control for lead, arsenic, thyroid deficiency, endemic in China in all these studies. So if you don't control for that, you can't add the studies and say that 27 out of 28 showed X, Y, or Z. You have to say that all of them were done poorly. None of them controlled for the things that we control for when we look at IQ. And the final really important point is that actually those studies prove that community water fluoridation is safe because all their control studies were one part per million and less. So you could say, okay, we've proven if those studies actually do show something, which I'm not sure that they do, that it actually proves that one part per million and less is safe. We don't need that 10 times factor that Mr. North was talking about. You don't need 10 times higher if you look at community water fluoridation levels of one part per million and less, which is even more than your 0.7 that you're proposing. Those were safe levels with normal IQs in the quote control population were what we're proposing, normal fluoridation, community water fluoridation levels.
Thanks, Doctor. Hi, welcome. Thanks for waiting.
Thank you very much. My name is Dr. Eric Brody. I'm testifying in support of fluoridation of the Bull Run water supply. I'm a board-certified pediatrician and proud to be a colleague of Dr. Feldman to my left. And I've lived in Portland for over 30 years, and I've just never ceased to be amazed that this most forward-looking city does not fluoridate its water. Before I go on to a couple other points, I just want to make another general statement from a famous pediatric infectious disease expert. And it relates to a lot of the sad stories we all hear by individuals. Obviously, everybody's heart goes out to people who have suffered. I mean, most physicians that I know want to help people. They don't like to see people suffer. We're fixers. We want to fix things. But the plural of anecdote is not truth. And I want you all to think about that. That's not my quote, but it's collecting a bunch of anecdotes does not make a point. Science makes a point. Dr. Feldman made the point. Prior to moving to Portland, I was an assistant professor of pediatrics at the University of Illinois, and I worked at Cook County Hospital. Like Dr. Feldman, I served the poorest of the poor. Interestingly enough, though, the Cook County population's dental health was actually quite superior to that which I served for 30-odd years here, working mostly in southeast Portland. I worked at a number of different Kaiser offices and saw lots and lots of mostly insured kids. I did a lot of physicals on kids 3 to 5, and you've heard all these stories and seen the pictures of children who ended up with the most incredible dental caries. And to reemphasize what Dr. Nicholson said, more we learn about pediatric general anesthesia, the less we like it. I mean, I always joke with people, stay away from doctors with sharp devices, tools like chisels and hammers and saws, you know, if you can. So stay away from people with masks as well, if you can. I support water fluoridation along with the many community organizations here today, our governor, Dr. Kitzhaber, and the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners. I encourage you guys to vote yes. I think it's really important and just a simple, seems to me to be a simple decision. Obviously, not everyone agrees with that. Good public policy and good public health includes taking measures to support everyone's dental health, especially that of the most vulnerable, low-income children. And there are extensive studies. Dr. Feldman knows way more about them than I do. Supporting the safety. Safety is just not an issue. I can't imagine. It's supported by, as you've already heard extensively too, every major medical and professional organization. So my plea to you, is to please support this very reasonable, very simple measure. Thank you very much for your attention. 3 minutes,
can you do it? Thank you. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Mayor Sam Adams and council members. I am Dr. Barry Taylor, an assistant professor at the OHSU School of Dentistry and the editor for the Oregon Dental Association. For 6 years, I worked full-time in a clinic that treated patients of all ages on the Oregon Health Plan. I enthusiastically support the addition of fluoride to the City of Portland water system. Much has been said to the benefit to children by fluoridating water, and it is true. But what I would like to speak about today is the huge benefit to adults and the elderly as well. It is conclusive that adults are keeping their teeth longer, increasing the need for dental care for the elderly. Many elderly are unable to receive proper dental care due to the expense, and the Oregon Health Plan dental funding is becoming more stretched while the elderly population is increasing. As people age, their gums begin to recede, exposing the roots of their teeth. These exposed roots are susceptible to cavities because the area does not have the protective layer of enamel. Cavities on the root surface are aggressive and destructive and lead to tooth loss. Additionally, many adults experience reduction in their saliva output, causing dry mouth, a condition referred to as xerostomia. Over 400 medications and 80% of the most commonly prescribed medications list xerostomia as a side effect. Without the anti-cavity benefits of saliva, these individuals have an even higher susceptibility to cavities. A combination of the elderly taking several medications, having gingival recession, and keeping their teeth longer put this demographic at great risk for dental problems. Fluoridating water reduces the extent and the number of cavities in the elderly. The benefit of exposure to fluoridated water is greatest when the individual is a child, but even exposure at later age will reduce the extent of the infectious disease of dental caries in the elderly. Thank you very much for your time, and I did give each of you a copy of this because it lists the sources I use for all the information in here.
Thank you for the citations. We've heard that it's topical fluoride rather than ingested that makes a difference. We've also heard that it's the fluoride ingested when you have pre-eruptive teeth, and now you're talking about the effects on adults. Could you talk a little bit more about topical versus systemic?
Well, I think there was one thing, an error made earlier, because someone said something about the post-eruptive and pre-eruptive, which it didn't quite make sense. So systemic would be that it's going into your bloodstream, for lack of, I'm simplifying things here. So a systemic effect would be that it's affecting the enamel of the teeth and the teeth as they are forming before they have erupted into the mouth. Once they've erupted into the mouth, then you're talking of a topical effect, meaning the fluoride is, you know, directly affecting the outside of the tooth. I'm trying to simplify, you know.
So it does work both ways.
It does work both ways, yes.
Thank you. And then my second question is regarding baby formula. My understanding is that the American Dental Association and the CDC have said that we can use fluoridated water, but that that does increase the risk of fluorosis. Is that correct?
I heard evidence today that you can use it for baby formula, but I didn't hear anyone speak to the fact that it increases fluorosis. The only evidence I've seen for fluorosis and everything that's mentioned today is when it's above, I believe, 2 parts per million. Everything that's been said today is that it's safe to use in baby formula when it's at 0.7. So I don't think that's the correct information to say that using baby formula with fluoridated water increases fluorosis. No one has said that today.
I saw it on one of the ADA websites, so I was just wanting some more information. Maybe others have.
I'm not aware of that.
Thank you.
Hi, thanks for your patience.
My name is Dr. April Love. I'd like to also speak on fluoridation's benefit for the older population, of which I am a member, and I had to borrow these glasses, and my paper isn't typed.
And you have the best last name for a doctor ever.
I know. That's why I got divorced, so I could get back to my maiden name. So too good to...
Well, tell us about it, doctor.
Yeah, it's a long time ago, which I'm going to talk about. 30 years ago, I left fluoridated Michigan to be a dental hospital resident at OHSU Hospital. I was shocked at the level of tooth decay and infection in the hospital population. What needs to be emphasized, and actually Barry was talking about this, in our discussions that the mouth is connected to the rest of the body. Especially in our medicatedly compromised population, dental infection can be the last straw. At OHSU, we saw diabetes go out of control, cardiac disease get much worse, brain infection from an abscessed tooth, and a patient who survived radiation for oral cancer only to lose her entire lower jaw from a dental infection. So why should we old farts, folks support fluoridation for our own good? Fluoride swallowed between birth and 13 years old is incorporated into the developing adult teeth. That's what Barry was talking about. The anti-cavity benefit lasts an entire lifetime, especially when we start having gum recession and our roots are exposed. This is the systemic effect. There was a problem because a researcher told the CDC that the effect of fluoride was only topical. Following that, Singh, S-I-N-G-H, did a study and showed that that the systemic effect was very dramatic. I want to talk about something when I'm done with this. It used to be that adults my age didn't have teeth. Now we do. And it's because of fluoride, not because we've been eating less sugar. But we need to continue to protect our teeth with fluoride to keep them. Older people tend to not have dental insurance. Medicare doesn't have dental benefits. And when we get stuck in care facilities, fluoridated water may be our only source of decay prevention. Please support it for your parents' sake. I did want to... My memory, you were talking, the second thing you were talking about.
Baby formula.
Oh, baby formula. Actually, what needs to be really emphasized is what we put in the water is for a child. The dose, that's a child's dose. And it was based on exactly fluorosis is what we'd see as a decay prevention without getting fluorosis. So one part per million was what it started with. And that was for a child under four, to get dental benefits without getting fluorosis. We tend to get fluorosis when, and that's for a child who drinks a quart of water a day. So if you have a child who is getting 2 parts per million of fluoride, then they would tend to get 20% would get very mild fluorosis.
So we're going to take a strict 6-minute break. When we come back, we're going to 1 minute, and we're going to, the last 20 people that are in the holding rooms, I'm going to ask them to go up to the balcony because we have room here in the chamber in the balcony. So 6-minute break, and we'll be back. For those of you that have your testimony at 3 minutes, start whittling it down to one. You and I have done this before. But we'd have to, I don't know. You and Randy can come over. I think
that I'll be.
Okay, that would even be better.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. I mean, I don't mind staying.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I didn't get to see the star.
I've been a little distracted.
Did that make for good television?
All right, if everyone will make their way to a seat, we've closed down the overflow rooms. I noticed some empty seats upstairs. So if everyone would please take a seat, that would be great. We're moving into the lightning round. If I could get everyone to take their seat, and if I could get two more elected officials in the room, or I'll settle for one more. All right, we've closed the overflow room, so everyone that seeks to testify should be in the room, or will be showing up. Before we end the hearing, we're going to start out with 2 minutes each. We have found that what can be said in 3 minutes very effectively is absolutely over-the-top persuasive in 2 minutes, and at 1 minute, it is, wow, very insightful. So, beginning with the negatives, we're starting with four against the measure. We've got folks with kids and then folks that have to get home to kids. So how many are those? Okay, then let's start with you two over there, and then you back there, ma'am. And sir, you? No, I'll take anyone with kids or kids you have to get back to. Yeah, for or against? And we'll do another panel of that as well if we need to, or any other dependents you need to get home to care for. So, hi, thanks for your patience. Ma'am, would you like to begin?
Hi, Sam. My name is Tamara Rubin. I am the national.
2 minutes? Sorry.
I'm the National Healthy Homes Hero. That was an award given to me by the CDC, EPA, USDA, USDOE, and HUD last summer. And I am the Healthy Child, Healthy World Mom on a Mission for 2011. That's an award. It's a national award as well. I'm also the executive director of the Lead Safe America Foundation. And I don't care about fluoride at all, really. I'm here because I've read several studies that show lead may increase a child's risk of high lead exposure by 200 to 400%. Lead poisoning causes permanent brain damage, learning disabilities, behavioral disorders, lifelong health challenges, kidney disease, liver disease, reproductive health disorders, including erectile dysfunction, which I like to mention because it gets people's attention. I know this because my children have lead poisoning. My children were poisoned here in Portland in 2005. And for anything that may possibly increase their lead exposure after all I've done to reduce their lead exposure, I would be suspect and wish that we would do more research, look into the research on the lead exposure. I was just speaking with a gentleman at the CDC. He said the studies weren't replicated. The studies are old. I'm like, well, I also spoke to Dr. Bruce Lanphier, who's the top pediatric epidemiologist in childhood lead poisoning in the world. And he said, you know, as a community, as a country, we need to first do no harm. And that all of the studies show that this issue necessitates more study, especially in the area of possible lead exposure to children, which is the direct correlative effect when you look at the neurocognitive impacts, including IQ loss. There are over 32 studies showing the impact of low-level lead exposure on IQ, and that can be correlated.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
It must be getting late. Did you say you're here to just talk about lead?
I'm saying that fluoride causes lead to be leached from the water system. There are several studies that show that fluoride causes a 200 to 400% increase in early childhood lead exposure. And my concern is that by adding fluoride to the water system, we will be lead poisoning our children. If you want to know more about lead poisoning, I'm making a documentary feature film. You can go to my website, misledmovie.com, M-I-S-L-E-A-D, movie.com.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Hi. Thanks for your patience.
Hi, my name is Dawn Lawrence, and I'm a mother and concerned citizen, voter, and taxpayer here in Portland. And I am here, I wanted to bring up the point that dental health is an issue of also diet and nutrition, and I wanted to talk about having healthy food that is in closer proximity to our children. I strongly believe that everyone deserves healthy teeth. However, not everyone should be ingesting fluoride. I think that even though we may not agree about adding fluoride to the water, I think we would probably agree that consuming sodas and candy made with sugar or high fructose corn syrup and processed foods laden with preservatives are neither good for our children's teeth or our own. But unfortunately, I've noticed since bringing my children, we frequently go to the community centers here, the Portland Parks and Recreation Community Centers, that when you enter the doors of any of our Portland Parks and Recreation Community Centers, one of the first things that catches one's eyes are brightly lit up vending machines selling exactly those things to our children, soda and candy machines, ice cream machines, machines containing food laden with preservatives that are neither good for our bodies or for our teeth. I always bring healthy snacks for my kids and tap water in a reusable bottle for them to eat and drink. But although I have tried to divert them from noticing the vending machines, it didn't take long for my two children to figure out what those big machines were and turn every trip that we go there into an opportunity to beg for candy and ice cream at the same time when they're going for swimming lessons or other healthy activities. So in your time in office, Mayor Adams, you've done many things that to make Portland a model that many other cities have been inspired to follow, but I just don't think that it's going forward on the fluoride issue. I think that if we're going to entice our children to try unhealthy, tooth-destroying food and beverages through the vending machines, why not also make healthy foods just as convenient? Let's invite if we can have the vending machines so close to those areas, let's invite local farmers to sell fresh produce just outside the schools and the Portland Parks and Recreation Community Centers one or more day a week. Let's make it just as convenient for parents and kids to get fresh apples, carrots, and kale on their way home from school or on their way to swimming lessons as it is for them to get sodas, candy, and processed foods.
I think it's a great idea. Thank you. Oh, for those of you that just joined us in the room, there's no hooting, no hollering, no clapping, and as you get more tired, you'll be more inclined to do that. So if there's any of that, it's no drama. We'll just have you removed. We're trying to make it comfortable for everyone to give their point of view on this issue, and believe me, there's passion on both sides of this issue in the room. Sir.
Hello, my name is Gordon Westfall, and I am a concerned citizen of Portland. I was born here, raised here, left for a while, and came back with two children. I noticed in this room I have been a number of people that have been on my cable television shows, Randy Leonard, Stan Adams, Bill Osmondson. So I have some research, you know, I have some knowledge and trust with some of you people to come on my shows and be there. So I'm not talking out my butt most of the time. Fluoride is classified as a drug through the FDA. You have no right through the Water Act to drug the entire population of people for just a few that need the fluoride. If you need the fluoride, you can go to the hospital, you can go to the churches, you can go and get the tablets. $5 million, $2 million a year to do fluoridation in our water, which is a chemical which is made by the heavy metal industry. I think we can save money by offering these tablets, which we already do. I've heard all day that we offer these tablets. And so I think drugging the entire population of people for a few, I think, is wrong. It's criminal. You know where fluoride comes from? It's from the phosphorus industry. They use depleted uranium to separate the minerals from the phosphorus. And the byproduct is a toxic product called fluoride, which should be paid to dispose of chemical waste product. But what they've done over the time is manipulated the dentistry and all these people, and now they use us to dispose of this product at very low dosages. It is a slow accumulative process that depletes and destroys the pineal gland. It calcifies the God gland, which gives us the connection to the spirit world. That is something that we can't afford anybody to do, especially in such an ungodly society. We have over 300 cities that are removing their fluoride from their cities today. In the last year, Fairbanks, Alaska, 80,000 people. Texas, New Brunswick, Albuquerque, New Mexico, Florida, New York City, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Phoenix, Arizona, Santa Fe, New Mexico, Anchorage, Alaska. There's 5 million people here that are removing fluoride from their systems. We have the cleanest water in the country, maybe even in the world. We don't need to be adding this toxic waste product into it. I have to say, Sam, you've been battling a lot in your life. You have a lot of people then pushing you around and telling you what to do and how to live your life and what to do with your body. And now I feel that you're becoming the same kind of people that are doing that kind of injustice to you by forcing their own agenda upon you. You are now becoming like them and forcing your agenda upon us. You have to do this and do the right thing. All of you have to do the right thing here. And lastly, please,
thank you. Your
the last
time is up.
People,
hey.
Right.
We don't use that language here.
I didn't, what language? I just said the last thing that I just wanted to say, who funded all these research programs?
That's it.
Thank you so much.
Hi.
God bless you.
Hello. I'm Kat Livingston. I'm a family physician. I'm also the mother of this wonderful, exuberant two-year-old.
What is your exuberant two-year-old's name?
Her name is Sierra.
Hi, Sierra. How are you?
How are you? You're on TV. You're a movie star. So, so professionally, I serve a low-income population. I do a lot of well-child care. Thank you.
Mommy's on TV.
This mommy.
There it is now.
This mommy
you too.
Up there.
Yeah, I'm up there.
That's you. Sue.
So clinically, I serve a low-income population. I do a lot of well-child checks, which I love to do. And mostly it's talking about how school's going and, you know, making sure things are going well in the family life. And most of the kids I'm seeing at this point have no physical findings whatsoever. But almost all of them have something wrong with their teeth. All of them have yellow, black, decaying teeth. I saw a six-year-old a couple weeks ago who had a full mouth of gold, all crowns. And it's really heart-wrenching because at that point there's little I can do. I prescribe my fluoride tablets. I put on fluoride varnish. I recommend daily toothbrushing, but it's not enough. It's too late. These kids already have cavities. They already have rampant dental decay. And so there's not much that I can do, even though I'm a perfectly well-intentioned primary care physician as well as their dentist, because it's too late. It needs to be in their water. And this is... it's distracting. <She's> but this is, I just wish that there were other areas of medicine that had as much evidence base as fluoridation does. There is very little that I do in my practice that is as well evidence based as fluoridation. As you know, every major medical and dental organization recommends it. So I guess you all are at a really important crux, and I'm really excited that Portland is finally getting on board with what basically every other large city in the entire U.S. has realized, which is that this is an incredibly well evidence-based policy. I'm excited about it for my patients. I'm excited about it for my daughter. And I hope I'll never have to sit there in a room with her while she's getting a root canal or a crown. And I really appreciate that your decision is going to make a difference in her future and all of my patients' future. So thank you.
Thank you. Bye, Sierra.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right. Anybody else with... young children or here that you have to get home to or dependents you need to take care of? Need to leave? And then we'll go back to the list.
To the support. Are we all supporters?
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll go back to, I guess we start again with supporters. Hi, thanks for your patience.
Hi.
Please begin.
My name is Jonathan Eder, and I'd like to address the claim that for every dollar the city spends, they'll get $38 back. It's my understanding it came from a 2001 study published in the Journal of Public Health. I have another study that was published in 2007 from the same journal, and it's an interesting study. It's called A Comparison of Dental Treatment Utilization and Costs by HMO Members Living in Fluoridated and Non-Fluoridated Areas. It takes place in Oregon and Washington. It uses 51,000 participants. And it lasted over a five-year period. And the conclusion of the authors, specifically for Portland, said, and I quote, "In Portland Metro, there was no evidence of a beneficial effect of fluoridation on total costs. In fact, costs were generally higher among members living in the community water fluoridated area than in the non-fluoridated districts of the metropolitan area." And I have a graph here, which I've blown up for your convenience. So you can see the chart here. The dark line is the non-fluoridated area. The dotted line is the fluoridated area. And it tracks almost identically. And this is true for all of the districts. This was done, again, with 51,000 participants using data from HMOs in this area over a five-year period in Oregon and Washington. So you should be aware of that. I have another study that comes from the very same journal, and it says that talks about food, fluoride in food, and it says that 25% of children at 6 months of age ingested amounts greater than the tolerable upper intake level of 0.7 milligrams a day. So again, and that study was published in just this year, in 2012, again in the Journal of Public Health Dentistry, the same journal that published your study that you're using to justify your financial claims. So I would strongly urge that you read this study.
Thanks. You'll leave it with Carla?
I can leave it with her if you like, sure.
That'd be great. Thank you. Appreciate it. Your time's up, and we got lots... I think we still have almost 200 people waiting to testify. So that's why I've got to move you all along here. Hi.
Hi, I'm Claudia Colon. I'm a newer member of the Portland community and a new parent, so this issue really hits home for me. I've always lived in communities with a fluoridated water supply and, frankly, have always taken it for granted. I was both shocked and dismayed when I found out that Portland denies its residents access to fluoridated water, and for reasons I still truly do not understand. When I moved to Portland in 2009, I was 32 years old, had never had a cavity in my life. When I first went to see a dentist in Portland, he looked in my mouth and said, "You must not be from around here. You don't have Portland teeth." That was surprising, and it was also the first time I realized that something bad was going on with Portland's dental health. So now, 2012, after 3 years of living in Southeast Portland, I now have my first cavity. I get regular dental care. I take very good care of my teeth and gums. The only thing that has changed is that I no longer have access to fluoridated water. As a new mom, a new one on the way, I now have a lot more concern about my children's dental health than my own. I work in public health, and I'm married to a physician. I come from a family of immigrants, and my husband is African American. Both of us have parents who've suffered from ill effects of poor dental health. We both have healthy teeth and gums, but now we're concerned that our children won't simply because of where we live. We shouldn't be moving backwards when it comes to dental health, and thank you for your time.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Doctor.
Hello, my name is Taryn Colon, and I'm a radiologist at Kaiser Permanente. I am a parent, as we heard, and I'm a Southeast Portland community member. I strongly support fluoridation of our water supply. As a radiologist, I diagnose and follow cancer patients almost on a daily basis. Throughout my career at Kaiser and during my training at Harvard Medical School and elsewhere, I have never seen, heard of, or been involved with a single case of cancer or osteosarcoma as having been subscribed to water fluoridation. Despite being a Harvard-trained physician, I do not think it's prudent to hold off on one of the top 10 public health advances of the 20th century due to a flawed, partial study from any one institution. The CDC, the U.S. Public Health Service, the National Research Council have all examined dozens of human studies without concluding a link between optimal water fluoridation and cancer. As a Kaiser physician, I strongly believe in prevention more than anything else that we do in medicine is what makes people healthier and saves lives. Fluoridation is a safe, effective treatment and lowers healthcare costs. If I had even the slightest concern that adding fluoride to our water would put my wife at risk for cancer or lower the IQ of my children, I would not support it. I want to thank Upstream Public Health, the City Council, you, Mayor Sam Adams, and Governor Kitzhaber for demonstrating true leadership on this important issue affecting our communities, especially those that are most vulnerable among us. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor, very much. Hi, thanks for waiting.
My name is David Morrison, and I think that the current drive to fluoridate our water is nothing short of scandalous, and I don't think that we really know all of the reasons behind it, but someday hopefully that will come out. I have a daughter also that has two autoimmune diseases. One of them is Graves' disease, which is hyperreactive thyroid. Her doctor told her to avoid fluoridated water. What everybody seems to think is or call the 10 greatest medical achievements, Time magazine in their April 1st, 2010 issue included fluoride in its list of top 10 toxic household chemicals. And I don't think they relied on fringe science to come up with that. Also, a lot of you are quoting the World Health Organization, American Cancer Society, NCI. I did a lot of research on this in a recent lawsuit. And I'd like to refer you to a 300-page document called The Procrustean Approach by Dr. Don Mache. It deals with corruption.
Sir, your time's up.
All of those agencies. Was that 2 minutes?
Oh, we cheated you out of a minute. Go ahead.
What a surprise. I'd like to also refer you
Carla.
To... I'd also like to refer you to a book by Nobel Prize winning... Deborah Davis called The War on Cancer, which is all about corruption within the American Cancer Society. Many of these high-profile organizations are considered captive agencies, which I'm sure you folks know about. Most every politician knows about that. You're laughing, but look at these things I'm telling you about.
I wasn't laughing. I was laughing because Carla said she'd like to get out of here.
Let's see, from I would too. I've been waiting all day for my 2 minutes, while others are speaking for 20 minutes. Okay, so what else? Much of the testimony today has to do with the inequities in the American culture rather than whether fluoride is safe. The cost of dental cavities or higher rates of cavities within poor communities is about the inequities in our society. And it's more about a corrupt system and should not be used as criteria for whether fluoride is safe. I have parents. I don't want parenting from the city council. Fluoride is pervasive and available, and people can get it if they want it. I don't want it. Fluoride will not take the place of good parenting or the massive amounts of sugar that are handed out in school.
Thank you, sir. All right. Let's go back to the sign-up sheet.
Oppose our support.
I think that we ended on, what was the last sign-up sheet we called off of?
Probably the
Oppose. So let's do, remember we're on shorter, so everybody get ready for short.
Okay, so we're on the support list. We have Sam Chase, Terry Baricello, Gary Oxman, and Katrina Hedberg.
That's what they told me.
And then after them on the opposed list, we'll be going with Kristen, unless there's John Summer, we're going to go with Kristen Stanelwitz, Michael Conley, Melba Duglonski, and John McLucas.
Councilor-elect Chase.
Hi, I'm Sam Chase, Metro Councilor-elect for District 5, and currently Executive Director for the Coalition of Community Health Clinics. More personally, I'm the father of two girls who attend Chapman Elementary School in Northwest Portland. I've worked on social justice issues most of my last 20 years and in different capacities with Portland City Council. And while we have much work left to do, this City Council has achieved great things to improve the lives of Portland residents. In that time, Portland has never been presented with an opportunity like this.
Can you get it closer, Sam?
In that time, Portland has never been presented with an opportunity like this, a chance to dramatically improve the health and quality of life for our most vulnerable children, homeless, and other adults, and on such a tremendous economy of scale. This is an opportunity that we are lucky to see once in a generation for our homeless, for our communities of color, for our children and their children, for all our Portland residents. Please support water fluoridation. Thank you.
Thanks, Councilor-elect. Commissioner.
Mayor Adams, members of the council, I'm Dr. Gary Oxman, and the health officer from Multnomah County, and I'm here speaking on behalf of the health department. I'm here to express the health department's strong support for the proposal you have before you today to implement community water fluoridation here in Portland. The health department supports this as an evidence-based practice for preventing tooth decay, and our board of county commissioners, who serve as our board of health, informed you of their support in a letter dated August 29th. I'm going to skip over the bulk of my testimony because you've heard similar comments from other folks, and let me just touch on it really quickly. We support fluoride because it works, it's safe, it's effective, and it helps address inequities in health status in our community. I do want to spend a few seconds talking about the issue of alternatives to community water fluoridation, as several speakers have brought up. And you know, I certainly see those suggestions as very well-intentioned. And some of the ideas I've heard are extension of school fluoride during the summer, access to clinical services, and other forms of individually focused care. On the surface, all this makes sense, but let me share our experience at the health department. And I've been with the department for about 27 years. During that time, we've done large-scale fluoride tablet distribution through the schools. We've done dental sealants in low-income schools. We have a network of clinics that serves about 22,000 dental patients with about 60,000 visits per year. The bottom line is we continue to have very poor oral health, particularly among the low-income residents who the county serves and who our community partners serve. And so we really do need to have another strategy, and we believe that community water fluoridation is the way to go. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Hi, thanks for waiting.
Hi.
Mayor Adams and Portland City Council members. I'm Dr. Katrina Hedberg. I'm the state epidemiologist with the Oregon Public Health Division with the Oregon Health Authority. And I'm here.
And I'll give you a few more seconds. What is an epidemiologist exactly for those listening in?
Well, I'm happy that you asked. We look at distribution of disease and risk factors in the population. So rather than treating individual patients, the population or all the residents in the community are our patient. And so we really look at what's good for the health of everybody in the community. That doesn't mean that we do. Some individuals may be more affected than others, but we're really looking at the health of the whole population. So I'm here to offer strong support from the Public Health Division for fluoridation of Portland's drinking water as an evidence-based practice to prevent tooth decay. It's a serious health problem, and I think one of the reasons that we're so in favor of this, as my training is as a public health and preventive medicine physician. And right now with healthcare reform, we're certainly looking at a lot of ways to deliver healthcare better. Prevention, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And really, fluoridation of water is much better than treating and having access to dental care after the fact. I think one of the things that's quite surprising and has been mentioned already, Oregon is 48th among states in the percentage of our population that has access to fluoridated public water. And this shows in the dental health of the population. I think all the statistics have been mentioned already. One of the things I specifically wanted to address, I do have a copy of the SMILE survey that folks had talked about. One of the things, this was not selected, it's a study, again, that's what I do, it was not selected in order to specifically question whether or not kids on fluoridated water had more or less tooth decay than others. So when we say Portland metropolitan area, I think Mayor Adams, you already said, this includes apples and oranges. Some of the people are on fluoridated water, others aren't. That the same is true for other parts of the state. So again, in order to really address that, I think one of the earlier speakers mentioned the difference between what was happening in Oak Ridge, in Lane County, and Florence. That's a much better comparison when you're looking at all the people in the community. So I'll leave this report with you as well, and I'd be happy to answer any questions about specifically those data. Thank you.
Thanks, Doctor. Appreciate it. Hi.
Good afternoon, or maybe good evening is
good
more
evening.
Correct.
Thanks
now.
For waiting.
My name is Dr. Terry Barrick. Hello, and until last year, I practiced general dentistry in Oregon City. Now I'm the Vice President and Chief Dental Officer at ODS Health. In my 13 years of private practice, I witnessed more than my share of preschool-age children with bombed-out mouths, full of rotted and discolored teeth. So many were in a lot of pain, and all of them were in a situation that no child should face. Rarely, I witnessed dental fluorosis, which is not a disease, but rather affects the way teeth look. In the vast majority of cases, enamel fluorosis appears as unnoticeable, faint white lines or streaks on the enamel, and does not affect function or health of teeth. In fact, in many cases, the effect is so subtle that usually only a dental expert would notice during an exam. Enamel fluorosis only occurs when baby and permanent teeth are forming under the gums. Once teeth break through the gums, they cannot develop fluorosis. The vast majority of fluorosis can be prevented by stopping children from swallowing highly concentrated topical fluoride products like toothpaste. Parents and caregivers should only put a pea-sized amount of fluoride toothpaste on a child's toothbrush and always provide supervision. There's absolutely no way to compare the pain and suffering children with cavities experience with those that have fluorosis. The first is a full-blown dental disease, while the other is more often than not a minor aesthetic issue, rather than any kind of big problem. Children with fluorosis are not experiencing any pain, discomfort, or suffering, unlike those with cavities and dental disease. Water fluoridation is a safe, effective, and affordable means or a public health measure, and I encourage you all to support it.
Thank you, Doctor. Thank you all very much. Okay, for against the measure.
Those are Kristen Stanelwitz, Michael Conley, Jay Harris Levy, and John McLucas. And then the next four off of the support list, if Charles LaTourette and Elaine Harrison have left, will be Richard Garfunkel, John Snyder, Holly Spruance, and Kyle Manah Johnson.
Would you like to begin?
Certainly. My name's Michael Conley. I'm the father of two teenage girls who have beautiful teeth. They were born and raised here. I'm not sure if it's because we are very diligent about their toothbrushing when they're young, but we really were diligent about that, or genetic things. I have serious issues with fluoridation. I'm worried about health effects on people with allergies, liver and kidney ailments. By all accounts, topical application is more effective.